I think in India, when companies are now starting to invest in setting up battery materials, like anode and cathode capacity in India, or even cell capacity, you can partner with someone to get a head start, I would say, but you have to own your IP and you have to continuously do that cash burn to be ahead in the industry if you want to be in this industry for the long run.
Hello and a warm welcome to a very special podcast series, Unusual Suspects. I'm your host, Gaurav Chaudhary. This is a series about unraveling stories of entrepreneurs, investors, professionals, and of course, philanthropists who are disruptors, yet not in your face. Their disruptions have consistently delivered on the purpose and the mission they've embarked on. Their values are as strong as the mission. While they're ruthless in pursuing their ambition, they don't stray from being leaders who are not just admired for their vision and relentless pursuit, but also for how they're building an ecosystem of believers who consistently push the boundaries. In each episode, I speak to one such leader, talking to her or him or them about their businesses, lives, inspirations, interests, challenges, pivot moments and turning points, successes, failures, and of course, the little joys of life and work. Unusual Suspects streams on earshot.in, spotify.com, Apple Podcasts, YouTube Podcasts, moneycontrol.com, and a host of other podcast streaming platforms and directories. Our guest for this episode is at the forefront of building solutions to power the global green transition. Energy storage systems are the foundation of renewable integration. However, many countries, including India, rely heavily on imported battery materials and rare earth magnets, many of which are in short supply globally. Epsilon Advanced Materials is one homegrown innovator that is leading the charge to make battery supply chains more resilient. Its pioneering technologies, extensive R&D, global network, and worldwide presence make it a strong partner for a secure and decarbonized energy supply chain. To shed light on Epsilon's journey, I'm pleased to welcome Vikram Handa, Managing Director of Epsilon Advanced Materials, to the show. Vikram founded Epsilon Group in 2010, which has become a key player in the specialty carbon and battery material sector. Under his leadership, Epsilon Carbon commissioned a state-of-the-art 200,000 tons specialty carbon facility in Bellary, Karnataka in 2017 and entered the carbon black business with a capacity of 115,000 tons a year thereafter. This integrated carbon complex boasts a 7% lower carbon footprint for its products compared to its global peers, and it is a zero water discharge facility. In 2018, Vikram founded Epsilon Advanced Materials, EAMPL, to supply sustainable battery materials and commissioned India's graphite anode material plant in Bellary, Karnataka, with a 78% lower carbon footprint compared to Chinese counterparts. EAMPL plans to expand its capacity to 220,000 tons by 2030 across India, US, and Europe. The acquisition of LFP cathode material technology center in Germany aligns with his vision of being the only anode and cathode manufacturer outside China for lithium-ion batteries. Delighted to speak to you, Vikram. Delighted to have you on the show.
Thank you, Gaurav. Very happy to be here.
You know, Vikram, we are having this conversation at a time when India is pushing forward with its plans for mass electric vehicle adoption. Only just last month, the Prime Minister launched the first Made in India EV that is set to be exported to over 100 countries. My question, however, is on specifically what the, you know, we're in the middle of the greening of the auto sector, which is a critical pathway for India's net zero ambitions and goals. In fact, with multiple government incentives, and these incentives are just not limited to the central government, state governments are also offering different kind of incentives. The domestic EV sector is projected to grow at a significantly high 35% annually, with sales expected to exceed more than 10 million USD by 2030. But having said that, however, all of this is taking place at a time when the geopolitical calculus is in the middle of a disruptive phase, if I may say so. Any curbs in supply chain could slow down this momentum. And momentum, as you would know more than anyone else, is critical for any business, particularly where technology is involved. You have warned that less talked about graphite crisis mirrors the rare earth situation. Can you elaborate on the geopolitical and market forces and the risks associated with it? And importantly, how is Epsilon preparing to navigate them? Because it's fraught with all kinds of possibilities, risks, and disruptions.
Thank you, Gaurav. Yeah, so as you said, we've been in the graphite space for the last 6 years, and we've been going through this journey of developing our own technology, scaling it up, qualifying with customers. And not many people realize that it's a 5 to 6 year journey to actually qualify with the customer. Graphite is a very critical component of cells that control, say, safety and fast charging. And cell companies don't want to take any shortcuts when they're qualifying suppliers. But what we've been seeing out of China, and you know, China has built a lot of overcapacity for various battery materials over the last decade or so, and a lot of credit to them for innovating and scaling up technology and government policy pushing that whole industry ahead. But graphite is one of those products where they have built close to 2 million tons of capacity in China. And today, outside China, you have a minuscule, you know, 80,000 tons sitting in Korea and another 10,000 tons of natural graphite sitting in the US. So when we look at like where is the materials going to come and how to de-risk the supply chain, there's too much focus on supply from China. And what they've managed to do actually is, because of this overcapacity, they're really, I would say, selling below cost today. Customers are liking that. There's pricing pressure and customers would like cheaper solutions and stable suppliers. But at the same time, in the last 18 months, we have seen clear signaling coming from the government about first export restrictions on product. Then you require a permit country by country to export. And then also restrictions on export of technology on graphite. So when these kind of signals are coming in, you can draw a parallel to rare earths of what has happened over the last 18 months. You know, you can see the writing on the wall that this is how they're going to control supply chains and energy transitions in other parts of the world and really have a stronghold on how, where battery materials are produced, where cells are produced. And I think it's very important for countries to recognize what are the choke points in a battery supply chain and figure out for themselves what do they need to do in their own home country to make sure that this industry moves ahead. I worry, and I tell my customers as well, you know, we need customers and we want our customers to be financially stable and grow so that we can grow with them. But companies in India are investing a lot in gigafactories today, and you don't want a reason where you try to save a dollar on graphite to be the reason why your whole gigafactory comes to a standstill just because you didn't de-risk your supply chain.
Absolutely. You know, Vikram, compared to if you do a global comparison, and we are, of course, a latecomer, particularly in the mass battery manufacturing space, because our entry has been quite late compared to global peers, particularly China. Do you see this as a risk or an opportunity? Because the advantages of, if I may say so, of a latecomer is that you are also on the right end of the technology cycle. Will it allow us to leapfrog? And how has Epsilon turned India's late mover status to its advantage?
Yeah, so I think you can look at it as an advantage and a disadvantage. You know, this industry, and not only battery materials, but even cell technology is evolving so fast that how do you stay ahead of the curve? We see that the companies in India that started investing 3 or 4 years ago have built up NMC capability, right? They've set up NMC cell lines. NMC was to be the winner. NMC 622, NMC 811 cathode materials were to be the winner. And that's what everybody invested in setup. And by the time they set up, which is, you can say, sometime in 23 or even 24, the industry had pivoted to LFP. I was visiting China a lot from 2020 onwards. And I was, other than seeing cost structures in China, I was just amazed to see that 40 to 50% of market share in China was LFP. And I kept asking, why doesn't anybody else do this outside? And it was like, no, you know, this is a very Chinese product and the rest of the world has bigger demands for cell performance and cars are different in the rest of the world. So in that part of the world, NMC is going to be the winner. But in China, yeah, LFP has done well. And then you obviously had the supply chain challenges on cobalt and nickel as well. And suddenly the industry started pivoting towards LFP. Now the companies that have invested into NMC today are not so competitive because the customer is looking for an LFP cell. And the companies that didn't invest today say, hang on, I'm not going to build NMC capability. I'd rather build LFP. That seems to be the winner. So back in 22, 23, I felt that LFP will be the winner. And that's why we also focused as a company that if you're going to get into the cathode space, it should be LFP. We don't have anything to offer on the NMC side, and we're not miners as such. So there's a challenge over there. But, you know, I always look at the industry is evolving, whether it's battery materials or cell companies. And what's important along that journey is to continuously invest and innovate and develop technology. While the Chinese, the Koreans, and the Japanese have done a great job industrializing and have built out the cell industry and the battery material industry, but they continue to innovate. And that commitment to spend money on R&D is really what today makes them market leaders. I think in India, when companies are now starting to invest in setting up battery materials like anode and cathode capacity in India, or even cell capacity, you can partner with someone to get a head start, I would say, but you have to own your IP and you have to continuously do that cash burn to be ahead in the industry if you want to be in this industry for the long run.
Absolutely. Indeed. You know, Vikram, and you have a ringside view of what's happening in this space and a front row seat. In your view, what steps should India take in the next 2 to 3 years to secure its battery material supply chain and reduce its dependence on China? Do you think we need to create a rare earth extraction policy, or what is it? And this also requires very deep capital for long periods of time. Specifically, what roles do manufacturing and supporting policies play in this transformation?
So you can't replicate what China has done, right? China has highlighted this industry as this new energy industry. And then universities innovate, federal funding goes in, like at a province level, funding goes in and infrastructure gets built. So that advantage can't be replicated. But, you know, the last few years, we've been discussing with government on various ways to boost this industry. Means obviously the ACC PLI was there to help cell makers, but there's no help offered to battery material companies. I think the government has deliberated a lot on what they can do, but no policy has come out. And it's not easy to come up with a policy because anode companies have a different requirement. I would love a upfront capex subsidy with cheaper power rates because we are very power intensive. Cathode companies would like, say, import subsidies on lithium because it has to come in, and certain other OPEX subsidies. Electrolyte companies would like something else. So the industry is not as simple as cement or steel where you come out with a policy and the industry moves ahead. So there's a challenge. I think one of the places where we are lacking and we could focus on is innovation again. I think there's a lot of great work happening at IITs, ISC, kind of universities, and how can we put more funding there, not only for say the academia, but also for private sector to take up, support private sector to also innovate and develop IP in a country like India. So I think that's one of the challenges. I spoke earlier about, you know, taking 4 to 5 years to qualify, and to qualify battery materials, you need a customer, because you're going to go back and forth with your customer iteratively and finally make something that he wants, and then only do things move ahead. So the challenge there is no customer in India. When we talk to even bankers or investors in India, they say, but who's going to take it? Where's your customer? So we started building the business on the foundation of we're going to supply other markets. We're going to supply Korea and Japan, and in turn, the large auto OEMs in the US. That's how I looked at the business. I said, I need a customer, and today my customer sits in the US. He's the guy I'm going to chase and qualify with and get into contracts with. And at the same time, continue this qualification journey with Indian customers. I really believe in Make in India and, you know, developing the supply chain in India for India. But I can't time this industry perfectly, and I need a customer to build my first plant. It's a large 5,000 crore investment in phase one, and I need to have qualified and work with customers. So a couple of things. You need to develop IP. You need a customer. And if the customer is not in India, then I think we need to work closely with the US to tap these customers. Other thing is also risk capital and where does funding sit, both equity and debt. I think longer tenure debt is very important for a sector like this because there's large infrastructure projects that need to be built. But again, I'm not saying there's a perfect policy out there, but there are a lot of inputs coming, and somewhere policy needs to nudge us. But it's again up to private sector and entrepreneurs to develop the tech, scale it up, and you know, build this industry out. I don't think the government will be able to build it out as such. We need to do it for India.
Absolutely. Vikram, you know, staying on that point, you know, there's now growing interest in ex-China sourcing for battery materials. Which regions are the most promising for partnerships for global supply chains ex-China?
I actually think India is one of the best. We have worked on projects in Finland. Our customers were insisting for us to come to Europe, and we saw Finland as the place where you have cheap green power and infrastructure to build our industry. We've announced a project in the US in October 2023, which we've permitted now. So when we look at these projects, the challenge really remains the high capex to build them out. And to give your return to investors, you need a certain price. And then that price is not comparable to today what they're buying out of China. So you need to go to a place which understands large-scale manufacturing, is very capex efficient, very opex efficient. And I don't see a better place than India. A lot of, I would say, Chinese companies today have gone to Indonesia and Morocco to build. So again, they're stepping out to try to build something in other countries. But I think India is a great place to build. One of our biggest raw materials is actually power. Green, and we want green power, obviously, to control the carbon footprint of what we make. And what better place than India, where there's, you know, this industry is booming and coming up so fast.
Indeed. Vikram, given your focus on both EV and stationary storage segments, how does Epsilon approach diversifying its customer base? You have alluded to it briefly, particularly in applications for graphite and LFP materials. And are there any new sectors that you are targeting, Vikram?
Yeah, so most of the customers we work with, whether it's the Koreans or the Japanese or even the Chinese to some extent, they're very mature in both segments. So they have different product requirements that go into energy storage and different that go into EVs. What we are seeing more and more is that LFP adoption is increasing. And one of the reasons that is that LFP itself is getting better and better. 2 years ago, the industry was using LFP version, you can say 2.0, and it was giving certain performance. Then they have gone to a Gen 3 product. And today the Chinese are also at a Gen 4 product. And what every generation does is lets them put more and more cathode material into a cell, hence increasing the energy density of the cell. And what has happened now is that an LFP Gen 4 product is very close to an NMC product. So if I'm a Tesla or a Mercedes, I actually prefer an LFP product in my car now because it's maybe 30% cheaper and 5% lower performance. So it makes sense to do that. Other than energy storage, I think consumer and defense applications are also very interesting, very demanding in performance, but a very, very small market. So the real growth obviously will come from EVs, but I'm a true believer that next 5 years we'll see very, very high growth in BESS and energy storage, because I always say that customer already exists. You know, solar deployment is 5 to 10 years ahead of today BESS coming. So the goal is just to convert your customer who's generating power into round the clock. So I like that as a customer. And I think here LFP has to be the winner to succeed and be very cost competitive. I think there's a very important matrix to remember here also. As battery materials, we sell our product at dollars per kg. The cell companies sell it at dollar per kilowatt hour when you read lots of reports about it. But if you see the end use, it's at dollar per cubic meter. So how much can you fit in the chassis of the car? How much can you stuff into a container? So you have the whole value chain, which is sold at very different, say, price points and calculations, but somehow it works, right? And at the end, the final product is a winner, but it all starts at the beginning from the battery materials.
Absolutely. You know, Vikram, how should the government policy evolve, the policy matrix evolve to support India's battery materials ecosystem beyond? I'm asking you because there is an incentive scheme that is currently in place, but we need to go beyond that. And what are those areas that needs to be ticked? What are the boxes that needs to be checked? What international models of best practices probably India could borrow some leaves from?
So actually, 5 years ago or so, when the ACC PLI scheme was coming out, I used to visit Niti Aayog a lot and ask, sir, what about us? What about battery materials? And the conversation would be around, look, we're giving the cell companies a subsidy. We expect them to pass it down to you. And obviously, there wasn't enough in the plate for them to also become competitive and them to pass it down to us. And I used to argue that instead of incentivizing cell making, why don't you incentivize battery material making? So if the materials are made and that industry booms, automatically cell making will get competitive and technology and capital will follow. But obviously, you know, starting with FAME and ACC PLI, they took that top-down approach and it's moved ahead. The battery material industry needs large investment. I'm personally not a big believer of a PLI scheme because people jumping into a PLI scheme and building capacity in a very technically complicated product where technology is evolving might not lead to actually the industry getting developed. And our goal is to really develop the industry. You want multiple anode, cathode, electrolyte, foil companies in India, supplying India and global markets. So I think one of the asks should be that we need longer tenure debt because these projects need to be looked as infrastructure projects. So 10 to 12 year kind of timeline of funding would really help us become very competitive to supply our customers and break in. I think there needs to be a pool of money put in, you know, even if it was 4,000 or 5,000 crores to say, okay, this pool exists for anode and cathode companies. The first guy who can build and cut an invoice starts accessing this pool based on a formula. What that will do is it will incentivize companies to either scale up technology quicker or tie up with someone to bring mature technology, but they will go forward investment. And most importantly, they will pursue a customer. And only when you have a customer can you invoice and you know, then get these government benefits. So rather than making it too complex, it should just be like, guys, you have 4 years, start building. I'm going to incentivize you as soon as you start producing. And people should work on it and scale up. I think that will also give a signal to investors as well that the government considers this segment important. And we need foreign capital, foreign technology, and we need Indian capital and entrepreneurs to build this industry out.
Vikram, finally, you know, let's fast forward to, let's look into the crystal, let's gaze into the crystal ball. Let's fast forward to 20, 30, 5 years from now. What do you envision for Epsilon's role in the EV battery value chain, both in India and, of course, globally? What are the key milestones that are likely to come about in the next 5 years? Because the market is also getting increasingly competitive.
Yeah, the market is getting competitive. Customer demands are increasing every day because further their customer demands are increasing. I look at us that by 2027, by end of 27, we have built our first 30,000 ton plant of synthetic graphite. 30,000 tons caters to about 30 gigawatt hours of cells. It's not a very large number if you look globally. In India, it might be a large number, but if you look at the US market, it's like 5-6% of what today they're buying from China. So I look at us building a 30,000 ton plant in India. I look at us building a 30,000 ton plant in the US. So after having these two facilities up, I think the model is established and we can then further scale up from there. Also, you have to understand today when we talk about synthetic graphite, the largest ex-China plant of synthetic graphite ever built is ours in India at 2,000 tons. So just, I mean, I tell even investors that, you know, just look back, I don't know, 50 years ago and the first guy coming and saying, I'm going to build a steel plant in India. And you would believe like that seems very, very difficult to do when no one has built one. So we're actually attempting to build something that only China has succeeded in building. And we want to be the first company that builds it outside China, both in India and the US. Our cathode business, we see huge opportunities over there. I think we're one of the only companies outside China with a mature LFP technology, more than 120 patents, a Gen 3 product, moving towards a Gen 4 product. And we see a first phase of 30,000 tons, that also coming up in India. and eventually scaling it to 100,000 tons. So I look at our battery material business and I say, we are an anode producer, we are a cathode producer in 2030. We have scaled up our recycling business and we've become circular and created this whole ecosystem in India. I believe our customers will really mature by 27, 28, and you'll see a lot of capacity come up in India. We look to work with them and we look to supply them. Obviously, customers need multiple suppliers and there should be hopefully multiple suppliers in India. And hopefully we can become a more Viksit Bharat by 2030 itself.
Indeed, absolutely. Very well said, Vikram. Thank you so much for sharing your deep insights and perspectives on a range of issues in a very important subject that is currently dominating the discourse in India. Thank you so much for taking the time out and dropping by to have this conversation with us. Thank you.
Thank you, Gaurav. It was lovely.